So, happy Day of Epiphany. Since this yearly Christian festival lands on a Sunday only once every 6 or 7 years, I'm thinking it bears a little extra attention this year than most. I'm guessing most years, as we come to January 6th, if it falls on a Tuesday or a Friday, I'm guessing most of us likely go through the day without even realizing, oh my gosh, it's the Day of Epiphany. That is, unless we lived in Latin America, for example. Down in Latin America, this would be a day, whether it's on a Sunday or not, January 6th marks a day to give gifts to friends and to relatives, to get together with family, and a day of celebration. Sounds like something we all just did not too long ago, doesn't it? Now, if we lived in Greece or Russia, we might participate in a very popular Day of Epiphany tradition down there, where they take a cross and they throw it in some freezing water of a river or a lake, and then everyone goes and dives in, hoping to be the first to retrieve it. Oh, don't you wish we had that tradition, huh? Now, there are some people who mark the holiday by simply baking an Epiphany cake. And then inside the cake, with the cake, they bake a little plastic Jesus. And then whoever gets that piece of cake with Jesus in it gets the honor of baking next year's cake. Oh, boy, I hope I win. Alas, I think for a good majority of us, at best, this 13th day after Christmas marks the time that it is appropriate for us to put the tree out on the curb or box it up and maybe turn off those outside light displays. And hopefully the caribou stops playing that awful Christmas music that they've been playing way too long. And we swear we're not going to have fudge ever again for a while. But this year, in that the Day of Epiphany falls on a Sunday, well, it's a little different. Now, we don't have any cake awaiting us. We don't have gifts that we're going to exchange, and I don't think there's a cross in the bottom of the Quick Trip pond. But we do have this wonderful Epiphany story that I just read for you in this season of Epiphany about the wise men. And this season is known as a season of light. And so it only is fitting that we tell the story of the wise men following the light of the Bethlehem star in search of a newborn king. The wise men are really front and center on this Day of Epiphany, the stars of the show, so to speak. Not much unlike they were at the children's Christmas program a few weeks ago. Now, if you happen to have missed the children's Christmas program, let me just say, this year, Mary, Joseph, and even the baby Jesus all got upstaged by the three wise men, or should I say, the wise children who were riding something very spectacular. So, come on in. I'm going to give you a little sampling of the wonderful new addition we had to our, come on in, yeah, don't be shy, yeah, yeah. So this made quite a scene here at the children's Christmas program. In fact, there was an audible ooh and ah as the three wise men came running in, or well, maybe walking in, and so very, very cool. And a big hats off to the people who sewed and built and stuffed, and a big hats off to the legs. So let's give them our hand. Very, very awesome. So, with the wise men, and we only get one today, but there were, you know, on the Christmas program, we had three of them, and we have three of those camels, so very cool thing. So, with wise men front and center today, let's talk about the wise men. Now, over the years of telling this story, we've kind of romanticized and embellished the whole story of the wise men just a little bit. We've even given them names. Most often, even at our Living Waters Living Nativity down at Coburn's, we find the wise men on bended knee before the manger with the baby Jesus, and then we've got Mary and Joseph and shepherds and cattle and all of that surrounding them. I remember once coming across a nativity scene that was for sale at a store, and it was a little unique. Instead of three wise men on bended knee, there were actually four, and three of them had the big kingly garb and the crown and everything, and then the other one happened to be wearing a big red suit with white fringe and black boots and a big white beard, and I must say an impressive belly, kind of a jolly old fellow. And the pious purist in me was absolutely mortified. Santa Claus, he was not there that night. Well, as it turns out, neither were the wise men. In spite of our nativity scenes traditions, the wise men actually didn't come into that scene. They didn't come riding in until weeks, months, maybe even up to a year after Jesus was born. So no manger for them to see, no shepherds, no cattle mooing nicely by the baby Jesus. Mary and Joseph by this time had upgraded. They were in a house and with real beds. So in spite of our classic Epiphany carol, "We three kings of Orient are," no one really knows how many there actually were. There could have been three, or could have been seven, could have been two. And they certainly weren't kings, not by any stretch of the imagination. These Eastern travelers were astrologers, which at that time was kind of the up-and-coming science of the day, though Jewish people did not like astrologers too much because they thought they were practicing witchcraft and they were sorcerers. So these scientists were also likely priests of a religion called Zoroastrianism. Yeah? So let's try this out. "We few scientists from Zoroastrianism are..." Yeah, it doesn't quite have the same ring, does it? So why all this information? Why do we care about any of this? There are a number of people who even question the validity of this story. After all, the wise men get no mention in any of the other gospels, so maybe Matthew just kind of made this whole story up. Well, so why all this Epiphany fuss and bother over a few astrologers who may or may not have followed a star to pay homage to the baby Jesus? Does any of this matter? Well, I'm here to say I think this story matters a lot, regardless of its validity. For within this story, within all the goofy little details, made up or actual, there's a deeper truth about our God and us. An insight, an epiphany about this baby Jesus born into our world. In this story, I believe there are two takeaways that, whatever your opinion, are worth our consideration, our chewing on as we seek to know who Jesus is in our own lives. And the first takeaway has everything to do with who Jesus, or who the wise men were, or maybe more accurately, I should say, who they were not, because they were not Jews. And back in those days, the Jewish people were considered the chosen people of God, and so they felt like they had kind of a corner on God. They had special access. They had the VIP backstage pass to the Almighty. So consider then the epiphany of finding out that the first people to welcome and worship the Messiah, they weren't the Jewish leaders. They weren't even Jewish. Besides that, they were people who practiced witchcraft, and they weren't even, they were foreigners from a whole different faith. Matthew, who wrote his gospel for a Jewish audience, starts it out with these foreigners being the first, among the first to see Jesus. And then he ends his gospel with Jesus telling his followers, "Go and make disciples of all nations." So obviously, Matthew has a point he's trying to make to his Jewish audience, and that is there is no exclusivity when it comes to God. No right or wrong, no in or out, no prerequisites, no special formula, no right way to worship, no VIP backstage pass. And you know, even though we've had some 2,000 years to get used to that idea, there's still a question that bears our asking. how large is your God? I grew up in a family where the Catholic Church was the evil empire. Yeah, I mean, our God was pretty small. My brother actually ran away from home because he was dating a Catholic girl and was getting so much pressure to break it off. Now, a couple of generations before that, the Swedish Lutherans would have nothing to do with the Norwegian Lutherans and don't even go there with the Finnish Lutherans, yeah. So I think we've come a long way since those days. I actually like Catholics. But still, I think it remains our great temptation to draw some parameters around our perception of God and how we think God should be worshipped, or how we think God requires certain things of us in order to be in good standing with God. We are reminded by this story that the minute we start thinking that we've got God any bit figured out, God surprises us. So I best not judge the hand wavers over at the evangelical church, or the rosary readers, or people who have no church background, or people from a different faith for that matter. Because their relationship with God is God's business, not mine. And it's a safe bet that God is larger than I think. No one is beyond God's embrace. Now, the other takeaway that I find in this story has to do with the bottom line when it comes to our allegiance, our loyalty, our ultimate trust in God. So enter in another key player in this story, King Herod. Now, when King Herod learns of the Messiah's birth by means of these foreign scientists, his reaction is fear and the feeling of being threatened. It would seem that the one thing that people in power sometimes seek more than anything else is to stay in power. And so suddenly now there is this threat of a new king on the scene. Herod had some deep insecurities, and they drove his behavior, and so he lashes out against anyone or anything who threatens him. He is basically a bully in a position of power. And so he tells these scientists to go find this newborn Messiah and then come back to him and report to him so he may also go and pay him homage, as if. My guess is these astrologers likely intended to comply with that request at first. But then they meet Jesus. And their reaction to meeting this newborn king is not fear. Matthew says they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. In Jesus, they found a greater power than Herod had, one that was not oppressive, but one that was loving, one that was not self-serving, but one that was liberating. And in their encounter with the presence of God in Jesus, they realized that their first allegiance, their ultimate loyalty, is not to human authority, but to God. And so as the story goes, these astrologers chose not to simply go along with what King Herod ordered them to do. They resist. They stand up for their where they place their trust. And they never return to King Herod. And again, in this Epiphany story, we find ourselves with a question to ask ourselves. How large is your faith? In a world that can be very good at identifying who's in and who's out, at a time when our country is so divided over matters of immigration, how much does our faith inform our opinions, the stands we take, the matters we defend? This story of the wise men, true or not, reminds us that we are often presented with a choice. And at a time when there's so much to fear in this life of ours, we can instead be motivated by love. By the example and nature of Jesus, who risked sowing that love in a world that was very dark and divided back then, as it is now. And Jesus, who continues to risk sowing that love in each of us, that we may continue to do his work, to give witness to his presence, and to be bearers of his amazing light, light that permeates and invades even the darkest of nights. So on this day of Epiphany, we may not have cake to eat and gifts to exchange, nor is there a cross in the Quick Trip pond. But at least may we be wise people, welcoming God's welcoming embrace and allowing the light of God's love to inform our choices and guide our lives. Amen.